Liberty in our lifetimes in a free state of our own. That's the vision. That's the dream. We are building it in New Hampshire. I'm Eric Brakey, your host and renegade statesman for the Porcupine Report. Welcome to your source for porcupine news and free-range conversation on matters of liberty. All right, let's hop into the show. Hello and welcome everyone to episode 6 of the Porcupine Report. I am your host, your renegade statesman, executive director of the Free State Project, Eric Brakey. Thanks so much for joining us. Good to see you. Well, I mean, I can't really see you, but you know what I mean. It's a figure of speech. Really appreciate you joining us. Whether you are watching as this, we stream this on Free State Project social media pages like X and Facebook. But of course, this podcast released every single Wednesday at 7 o'clock is also available on all of your favorite podcasting apps, whether that's Apple or Spotify. In fact, one thing that you can do to help promote the show is to go ahead, be sure that on your favorite podcasting app, you are subscribed. So you get that ping on your phone every single week letting you know there's a new episode of the Porcupine Report that you aren't going to want to miss. And while you're there, you could also, you know, leave a nice comment, leave a nice review. It helps promote the show, lets people know we're doing a good job. And leave the review. It really helps if you like the show. If you don't like the show, you can just leave that between us. You don't need to tell anyone. But if you love the show, please let everyone know. And if you don't like the show, you're probably just a statist anyway. This kind of isn't for you. Only liberty lovers on the Porcupine Report. Well, let's hop in. First, as always, I want to promote one of our great upcoming events with the Free State Project, which in just 9 days from when this episode is airing, we're going to have the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. Keynote speakers include the great 4-term Congresswoman from Hawaii and former presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard. She will be joining us speaking to all attendees of the New Hampshire Liberty Forum on Saturday. We're looking forward to having her. Glenn Jacobs, who we just had on the program last week, mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, and WWE superstar Kane. He's going to be one of our keynote speakers for Saturday evening, and Brian Kaplan of George Mason University, professor of economics, our keynote speaker on Friday evening. And those are just the keynote speakers. I haven't even mentioned all of the other wonderful speakers who are joining us, one of whom is going to be on the show with us today. So that's 9 days, just 9 days away from the airing of this episode. You aren't going to want to miss it. So that's Friday, March 15th to Sunday, March 17th. Grab your tickets at nhlibertyforum.com before prices increase on March 1st. That's what the script says. We're beyond March 1st. Sorry, you missed the early bird discount, but you haven't missed out yet on your opportunity to get some great tickets to a great event, see some great speakers, and come spend some time with all of us lovers of liberty in the state of New Hampshire. Would love to see you there. All right. And when you do come, say hi to me. Say you're a viewer, a listener of the Porcupine Report, and I will say thank you so much for listening. All right. So before we get in with our guest today, I just want to share a little bit of news. We are recording this on Super Tuesday. So that means that by the time this airs, we'll know all the results of all the contests going on in Super Tuesday. I still have not yet made the move to New Hampshire. I'm finishing up my term in the Maine State Senate, so I'm recording this from Maine. I did vote today in the Republican primary. I don't know what the results will be of Super Tuesday, but I just want to give a really great congratulations to a particular candidate who performed very well in a recent contest. I want to congratulate Nikki Haley for winning the Washington, D.C. primary. I think like 2,000 people voted or something. It was very low turnout. Interestingly enough, you know, small turnout, you know, District of Columbia gets almost as many delegates to the national convention as the first in the nation primary in New Hampshire. Someone should check into that. Like 300,000 people vote in the New Hampshire primary and like 2,000 people vote in Washington, D.C. And we've got the same amount of delegates. Someone should check into that. Anyway, I want to congratulate Nikki Haley on winning the Washington, D.C. primary because, boy, that's a match made in heaven to be, you know, she is endorsed by the swamp and makes a lot of sense for a warmonger like her. So she's not, doesn't seem to be winning anywhere else. Cross my fingers. We'll see. Who knows what's going on Super Tuesday. By the time you see this, I don't know, maybe she won something. I personally doubt it, but it doesn't surprise me. Washington, D.C. and Nikki Haley, boy, I understand why the swamp loves her. All right. And I will say I am very much knee deep in the Maine legislature right now. I do want to share something with you. You know, I was very disappointed today, the day that we're recording this, that, boy, the Maine House of Representatives just passed something called the National Popular Vote. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it's basically they want to bind the state's electoral college votes to the so-called national popular vote. There's so many problems with this, but I mean, for one thing, certainly, it disenfranchises small states. The electoral college was created so small states like Maine and New Hampshire would have a say in the election of the president, and that these contests aren't just decided by huge population centers like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles and San Francisco. I mean, what's going to happen under a national popular vote system, right? Presidential candidates are just going to focus on the big cities, and rural communities and small states are going to be left behind and completely forgotten. But you know what? In Maine, I think it just goes to show just how frustrating things have gotten in the state of Maine compared to our neighboring state to the west of New Hampshire, where I will be moving later this year. There's just been this continuous effort to disenfranchise the people of the 2nd District of Maine. The 2nd District of Maine, Maine is in a unique place where Maine splits its electoral votes by congressional district. So in the last two presidential cycles, Maine split its electoral votes. The 2nd District went for the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, 1st District, and the statewide overall went for Joe Biden and then Hillary Clinton previously. But it's just been this effort continuously to disenfranchise folks in the 2nd District of Maine, which is the more rural part of the state. It's the by landmass, it's the biggest congressional district east of the Mississippi. And not only did we recently have, you know, the congressman was replaced because of this ranked choice voting thing that was passed by the people of the 1st District, right? That led to the Republican congressman being kicked out and the Democrat congressman being put in. You have the Maine Secretary of State who just tried to kick Donald Trump off the ballot, regardless of what you think about him, right? I know that there's many, many opinions. And as a libertarian, there's much to critique about Donald Trump, believe me. But we had our Secretary of State try to kick him off the ballot. And of course, the U.S. Supreme Court just came out and said, that was wrong. He's on the ballot. But it's like if they can't kick him off the ballot now, they're going to just bind us all to this national popular vote where folks in big cities like New York and Chicago, Los Angeles are going to have more of a say over the electoral votes of the state than the people of Maine. Well, this just goes to show if this keeps going this way, then I think more and more the people of the 2nd District of Maine, maybe they need to think about breaking away and joining New Hampshire. I mean, just think about how great that would be. Just think about it. You break away, you join New Hampshire, and you get so many of the freedoms that the people of the 2nd District love, but the people of the 1st District of Maine keep voting to take away. Your gun rights are protected. The no income tax, no sales tax, school choice. And you get to, and nobody's going to mess with your electoral college vote. It's an idea. I'm just throwing it out there. And then maybe if the people of the 2nd District of Maine actually did do that, maybe I wouldn't even have to move. I could join New Hampshire without having to get a new place to live. That would be great. I don't think it'll happen, at least not not so quickly, but just throwing that idea out there, all my Maine friends who are listening in to the Porcupine Report, you know, freedom lives just one border away. Maybe we could move the border. Just saying. All right. That's enough on my complaining about politics in the state of Maine, because we are, of course, talking, this show is focused on what's going on in New Hampshire. And it, as you may remember, on episode one, we spoke with Representative Tom Mannion, first term state representative in the New Hampshire House, who has been one of the leading individuals inside the legislature working to pass Defend the Guard legislation. Defend the Guard, for those who aren't aware, means that a state, the state government, the state legislature would be exercising its authority over the state militia, the state National Guard, under the U.S. Constitution to bring our troops home from wars that have not been properly declared by Congress, right? That's the requirement. Well, we spoke with one of the guys working on the inside, Representative Tom Mannion. Today, we're going to talk with one of the top leading activists working on the outside, working on influencing the legislature without being a legislator himself. His name is Derek Prue. He is the state director of Bring Our Troops Home. And before we jump to him, he sent us a great promo video for Defend the Guard, with voiceover by my good friend, the great Scott Horton, who you've got to get on this program one of these days. I just did a great interview with him on his show. We got to get him on this show at some point. But let's cue up this video on Defend the Guard. I want to share it with all of you.
It was stated that only five times we have declared war in our history. True. But who's going to stand here and say that men that died in Vietnam and in Korea weren't in a war?
Defend the Guard is one of the most important and exciting things happening in American politics today. Simply put, Defend the Guard legislation says that the states will refuse to allow the president to nationalize their guard troops for overseas combat without an official declaration of war by the U.S. Congress.
It's not like hippies who are against
war.
It's badass combat vets who are telling you exactly why, short of a congressional declaration of war, you do not have the right to use the national reserves, you know what I mean, for your
fund. In other words, never again. Since Congress, of course, will always refuse to take responsibility for the wars they finance.
You tell that widow, or you tell that orphan, I'm sorry, son, but your father had to die because we didn't want to lose federal subsidies.
The PBS NewsHour came out and did a 15-minute segment on Defend the Guard last year. Everywhere they testify before state legislatures, the Pentagon races to send a two-star general to try to intimidate the states into sticking with the status quo. You know what that means. It means that the Defend the Guard movement is hitting the war party right where it hurts.
It puts the brakes on before we rush headlong into some unnecessary war again.
Great nations do not fight endless wars.
It's just true. And now the majority view. These wars do not serve the national interest, only narrow special interests. And while the government can safely disregard public opinion on almost every issue, without the mass support of the right, they just can't do it.
If you really want to honor veterans, quit making them.
To save America, we've got to abandon the empire.
This is a very sound effort to bring back once again the constitutional responsibility of all of us.
The spell has been broken. Americans can be tough, but smart. Learn more at bringourtroopshome.us and defendtheguard.us.
Boy, watching that gives me chills. You know, and it really does seem to be making the higher ups in the military industrial complex nervous. So to come on and talk with us about the continued effort of Defend the Guard, both the momentum that's building nationally and the effort on the ground in the state of New Hampshire, let's welcome to the show the state director for Bring Our Troops Home, Derek Prue.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. Boy, well, I guess just let's hop right in. Do you think Defend the Guard is making the military-industrial complex nervous?
It sure is, because if it didn't, then they wouldn't be trying so hard to fight us. I mean, everywhere we go, as you know, that ad promo that Scott Horton helped make said, like, they just send their either the tag themselves, the Adjutant General of the National Guard, who's kind of in charge of, you know, the state's National Guard. They either send that person in, or they send in the deputy tag, or they just end up sending someone from the Pentagon, whatever it might be. They send someone to, you know, try and intimidate, you know, representatives who will be voting on the bill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you, you know, you were there. I know you have been really working on this in the state of New Hampshire, but when we needed some backup in the state of Maine, when we were working this bill, through the committee process, I know you and a couple of folks from New Hampshire came over and joined us and testified on the bill in the Maine Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee, where we got four votes for the bill, a minority, but you know, made some progress in the House and the Senate. But boy, you know, the Adjutant General, like in every single state, they do not like this bill. And it always seems to come back to, what if the federal government doesn't give us money, right? As if I guess, how do you react to that? Because that's always the top concern these days. I mean, maybe in the past it used to be like, well, these are noble wars that we're fighting and we're spreading freedom and democracy around the world. Nobody believes that anymore, right? So they can't make that, they can't make that justification. When you hear that, well, we've got to keep sending our sons and daughters in the New Hampshire National Guard off to Syria, off to far-flung countries where Congress has never declared war, how do you respond to that?
You know, a lot of times I try and, you know, judge the audience that I'm speaking to. But in terms of funding, there's a few different ways that you can go about it. You know, there's the technical arguments, which, you know, might work on some people, but for the majority doesn't really. And then there's more like the emotional side. Like in that video, Pat McGeehan, he kind of really touched on that really emotional aspect, right? You tell that widow, yeah, you tell that orphan that your, you know, father, your husband, your son had to go die because we were too afraid to give up federal subsidies, right? We were too afraid to give up the carrot, right? So you know, you can talk on that. But you know, just like the more practical side of things, I mean, defunding a state's National Guard would be so massively unpopular politically, right? Who are the people of the state going to blame? Their state legislature, who is only asking Congress to do their job, or are they going to blame their congressmen, their senators who are there, who will be voting on appropriations bills, right, for states, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act, right, that has to get passed every year? Who are they going to be more mad at? Obviously, they're going to be more mad at the federal side of things. Yeah. And of course, Paul Gosar from Arizona, Congressman Paul Gosar, like, he has stated, and so has Thomas Massey too, that no one in Congress would dare, no one, Democrat, Republican, would ever dare even bring up, discuss, talk about defunding a state's National Guard for whatever reason. And on top of that, just again, practically, that would make the state and the country less safe, right? Because the National Guard, yeah, is supposed to be that last line of defense. They're supposed to be trained. They're supposed to be there to protect for national disasters and things like that. Like, it would just make everything less safe. So the whole funding argument is just, you know, it's just, you know, it's nothing.
Yeah. Can you imagine Joe Biden coming to the American people and saying, you know, we're going to defund the National Guard for three states have passed this through legislative bodies now, New Hampshire, Arizona, Idaho. We're going to defund their National Guard because I don't want to go to Congress and ask them to authorize the war in Syria that has been going on for a decade now with no AUMF, even no authorization whatsoever, just a president say so.
Yeah, that'll go over real well.
Yeah, I don't think that's
especially when he's already having a lot of problems with his own party regards to you know, wars overseas.
Yeah. Seems like a recipe to lose his re-election, right?
Yeah.
So let's going to get into a lot more here, but let's back up a minute. I'd like to know a little bit more about you, Derek. How did you get involved in the Liberty Movement? How did you get involved in the Defend the Guard effort in particular? Like, what's your story that brought you along the way to where you are right now, working with Bring Our Troops Home in New Hampshire?
Yeah, so I'm from New Hampshire, born and raised. Spent a lot of time, you know, in the mountains and everything. Just kind of grew up like a regular, I guess, New Hampshire Granite Stater. Live free or die ethos, you know, live and breathe it. Just really believe in, you know, a lot of what live free or die like actually means, like the true meaning behind it. And believed in, you know, the things that our founders fought for in the Constitution. And so I ended up enlisting in the New Hampshire Army National Guard. Served for 6 years as a sergeant in the HIMARS unit, you know, those big expensive toys that we keep sending to Ukraine. So I never went into combat or anything like that, but I did spend a lot of time with people who are in combat and had to think about combat, especially towards the end of my career when the whole thing in Ukraine started heating up.
So I
really kind of started thinking about, you know, America's purpose in overseas wars when we were doing a training mission in Hungary, in Europe. You know, the stated purpose was to, you know, practice maneuvers for in case there was a war with Russia or something like that, right? And, you know, a lot of the military is a lot of hurry up and wait. So, you know, we hurry up and then we wait around for practice fire missions to come down, that sort of thing. So while I was waiting for fire missions, you know, you end up reading a lot and scrolling through social media and I ended up coming across the drone papers that was, you know, published by The Intercept. That was the whistleblower Daniel Hale. 90% of drone strikes were not on the intended target. Basically, they were like judging, you know, the way Iraqis were doing different things and basically saying that, you know, they were terrorists on a whim. So, you know, that kind of really affected me, especially being artillery, rocket artillery. You know, we don't exactly see what our opponent is doing, much like a drone pilot might not exactly see what's going on and, you know, rains down fire on them. And, you know, that kind of got me thinking. It's like, they didn't fire back at me. We're just giving orders to shoot at them for the most part. So, really got me thinking about, you know, what our purpose was overseas, started reading through the whole Iraq war, found out that, you know, at the time I was only 19 years old, didn't really know much about the Iraq war. You know, I was too young at the time to really understand when it first began. But like really understood like the whole WMDs in Iraq was not real. It just, you know, you start falling down the rabbit hole. And that kind of woke me up to a lot of things. And at the same time, COVID happened, and that like really was the, you know, it really messed me up on my trust for government. I could see the whole government takeover, you know, erosion of our rights during COVID from a mile away. You know, I had a basic understanding of history to know that when a government takes power, it's very hard to get it back.
So
started seeing the way government was doing things wrong, especially being in the National Guard, where a lot of COVID response was done through the National Guard, right? I saw the back end of everything, the corrupt bureaucracy, and I was like, something needs to be done about it. And, you know, I got that mindset. I don't really have a right to complain about something unless I'm willing to do something about it first. So I was like, all right, I got to get involved in, you know, politics and government somehow. And that's how I kind of fell into the New Hampshire Liberty scene.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're so glad that you did fall into the scene because you have been doing, I mean, you've been doing great work. I mean, I think the simple fact that the New Hampshire House of Representatives just passed Defend the Guard is monumental. And to see the momentum that's growing from this around the country, I mean, New Hampshire House just passed it. The Arizona Senate passed it for a second time. The Idaho Senate just passed it. Momentum seems to be really growing. And of course, New Hampshire is part of the tip of the spear there. Could you tell us a little bit more from your perspective before we get into kind of what's next in New Hampshire? As sure this is moving forward through the, at some point, it's going to be hopefully ending up with a vote in the New Hampshire Senate. What did you see on the House side? What was your experience? What kind of work went into making this happen?
Yeah, so, you know, Defend the Guard really as a national concept, as a national project, is very new, right? You know, had its, you know, very, very early beginnings, like you said, in Maine, in your first episode with Tom Mannion, then with Pat McGeehan in West Virginia. And it wasn't until like a few years ago that it's really become, you know, a more national project. Now we're in, I think, 38 states now. Actually introduced in 38 state legislatures. But it's been introduced in New Hampshire a few times over the last few years. And in 2022, when it was introduced, in the, you know, state committee meeting, right, every bill has its, you know, public hearing and committee, and the committee votes on these bills for a recommendation for the full House. It only had one person show up to testify in favor of the bill, which was the prime sponsor. He didn't really know much on the bill, and it ended up, you know, being inexpedient to legislate 14-2 out of committee. Mm-hmm. So not really in a good place. You know, the whole, you know, if you look on YouTube, like the whole hearing is like, you know, less than 10 minutes. It was the prime sponsor testified, and then two people from the State Veterans Advisory Committee, and then the deputy TAG, they showed up to testify against it. So, you know, my whole process into you know, Defend the Guard project in New Hampshire really started right after that. Diego Rivera, who, you know, he's Bring Our Troops Home field director, like he's really out there driving a lot of the momentum across the states. Diego, awesome dude. He was kind of trying to find new leadership in New Hampshire because, you know, things were falling off, especially after like just having one guy show up and he didn't really know, you know, what was going on. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really a good look. So, you know, I stepped up. I met Diego at my first Pork Fest in 2021.
Yeah, that's when the three of us were on a panel together, correct?
Yeah. So it was myself, you, Diego, and Ben Adams, who's now a state senator in Idaho.
Yeah.
Who is the prime sponsor for the Defend the Guard in Idaho. So the four of us, we did a panel. I'm brand new to Liberty. I'm up there in this panel with, you know, yourself and Diego and Ben Adams. And, you know, Diego's really asking me to take charge of things in New Hampshire. And that's when I decided to reach out and try to come up with that video that you just saw at the beginning of this. So that video, we put that together. And what we wanted to do, you know, was trying to reach more of the right crowd, which, you know, as you saw from the video, is more towards the right.
Yeah. It's one thing to get the hippies. It's another thing to get the combat vets. And to get the people who are patriotic, like red-blooded Americans. And it's not because, like, right, you know, there's this image people have sometimes of, oh, if you're anti-war, it's like this, like, you know, this, like, I don't know. I think this comes out of, like, the Vietnam era, that, like, you're, like, people who hate this country, you want to burn the American flag, you don't support our troops, right? But really, I mean... at least for so many of us, right, the sense of being anti-war is that it's been we love our country, and this empire that has grown up, you know, out of our country is a corruption of it. It's a corruption of the founding principles. It's a corruption of what our founding fathers kind of, you know, warned us against. They warned us against going abroad in search of monsters to destroy. They, with studied care, they placed the power to wage war in the hands of the legislature on the federal level, not in the executive branch, right? It is a love of America founding principles that leads us to say there has to be accountability here in how our troops are sent off to war, right? And that's, I mean, boy, you know, since the era of kind of the immediate post 9/11 era, the Bush era, I mean, to see the transformation that's taken place and the ability to reach people on the right with this message, where just, you know, you go back a decade and a half and people were just unreachable. I mean, it's very encouraging.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of, you know, the approach that we take at Bring Our Troops Home is, you know, kind of what we call the Horton method, right? And, you know, approach the left from their left and approach the right from their right. You know, you're talking to people on the right, it's like, no, like the constitutional thing is what we're talking about, right?
And right.
You talk from the left, right? No, the progressive thing is being anti-war, right?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of it. But that video, you know, we commissioned that and, you know, it cost $1,000 for that video and we fundraised that in 6 hours. So a lot of the power, and this is something that's, I would say is very unique to New Hampshire. We do have a very close knit, tight community of liberty activists. When push comes to shove, you know, we're there for each other. We either can help or we know the right people who can help, right? Everyone's kind of connected with each other for the most part. So, you know, to raise $1,000 for a video, you know, it took 6 hours. You just put the word out there and, you know, people are really happy to help, especially, you know, with a really great project like Defend the Guard. I mean, Defend the Guard really is the most reasonable way to take down the war machine. Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that we've tried. You know, Defend the Guard was Bring Our Troops Home as an organization was started to go lobby in Congress to ask congressmen and senators like end the AUMFs. And when Dan McKnight, you know, who's the founder of Bring Our Troops Home, when he went down to Congress in D.C. and had meetings with all the congressmen, he got laughed at by every single one of them. They're like, no way are we bringing our troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's not going to happen. So he's like, all right, what do I do now? Right.
Yeah. Got change strategy.
Right. So this whole Defend the Guard movement, you know, was born from, there is no federal solution. This is the most reasonable and effective strategy to actually bring our troops home, end the forever wars, return to the Constitution, uphold the Constitution, as in our motto.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you say there's no federal solution, right? In some ways, I know what you mean, but even that's like a corruption of the word federal, right? Like we called it a federal government because it was supposed to be decentralized, right? It wasn't supposed to be a national government with centralized power. So ironically, there's no national solution, but this is the federal solution. This is a decentralized solution. This is, you know, appealing to the original federalist nature of our system, which is supposed to leave so many of these powers invested in the states, right? And I mean, it's clear as day when you read the Constitution, right? There's three circumstances under which you can take our National Guard off to foreign wars, there's three circumstances under which Congress can mobilize the National Guard for combat purposes: to suppress insurrection, which is a domestic function, right? You don't generally suppress insurrection in other countries. And I always like to say, you know, you look at Syria as an example, the mission was specifically to promote insurrection, right? So it runs completely counter to the purpose there, right? They wanted to have an insurrection against the Assad government. And so we're go over there to try to foment that. You can to repel invasion, right? That's a domestic purpose, right? We're not repelling an invasion in Syria. There was an invasion of Syria, but we were not repelling it. We were the invasion, right? Or to enforce the laws of the Union, right? So if you can't come up with one of those other two, that third one's pretty broad and open-ended. But to have a law of the Union, the laws have to be passed by Congress, and they refuse to do their job. And they're just in this, like, they're in this sweet spot, right? The reason you will never get any accountability from them, they're in this sweet spot where they're getting all the money from all the military industrial contractors coming into their campaigns, coming into their PACs, and they like that, right? As long as they don't mess up the gravy train, right? It's a, in some ways it's a bit of a, it's a money laundering operation, right? You send, you take the tax dollars from the American people, you funnel it to the weapons manufacturers and the military industrial complex, that those folks get rich off of it all. And then they take a portion of it and they funnel it back to people's campaigns and political action committees, and things just keep going on. But, you know, I think as folks found out when they actually voted to authorize like the war in Iraq, which, you know, I would argue they didn't do it in an actual constitutional way, an AUMF basically saying just delegating authority to the executive branch to decide, that's not what the founders envisioned for how this is supposed to work. But at least there was some kind of vote on it, something you could point to and say, this congressman voted to authorize a disastrous war in Iraq that, as years went on, people realized how terrible it was. Well, people got voted out of office over that. And so they don't want to ever go on record. Why would they? They get to have their cake and eat it too. They get the money from the money laundering operation. They get the money from the military industrial complex, which is just our taxpayer money coming back at them. And they never have to go on record where they can be held accountable by their constituents. It's a perfect situation for them. So the only way to really to break that down is to say, that's fine. We don't need you. We're going to the states and we're going to have the state legislatures use their authority, which, you know, as much as our republic has sadly evolved under this idea of a living constitution, which means generally the limits on power of the federal government tend to not be so limited anymore. As much as it's evolved, you still have remnants of that original construction. And it's pretty explicit that the state National Guards answer to the states unless mobilized under one of those three features. So this is the Achilles heel of the whole war, you know, the whole war machine. And it's so encouraging to see after all these years from the early efforts in Maine and West Virginia. And you mentioned Pat McGeehan. I happen to have, shout out to Pat McGeehan of West Virginia, I happen to have one of his books here with me. A great read, Stoicism in the State House. Not really on topic with all this, but it's a great read if you're a legislator looking to be steadfast and stoic in your commitment to principles. So shout out to Pat McGeehan there. But the progress that's been made is astounding. And it seems more and more, as we saw in New Hampshire, in Idaho, and Arizona, it's passing in one, you know, it's passed in one of the two legislative bodies in all three of these states. The other half of those legislative branches, we still have to worry about. But it seems inevitable as momentum keeps building. Eventually, a state's going to pass this. Now, let's come back to New Hampshire. It's passed the House. It's going on to the Senate. What's happening right now? What should people expect as far as things move forward in the New Hampshire Senate?
Sure. Before I get into that, I kind of want to just backtrack just a little bit. How do we really get to passing the New Hampshire House? So a lot of that comes down to when I first got started, right? And this is for every state, right? You've got to find your prime sponsor first. You got to find the people to introduce this bill. And, you know, I had a lot of really awesome reps, Tom Mannion himself, right? Who's on that first episode. He wanted to be the prime sponsor. Now, you know, unfortunately, the way you kind of have to have a pulse on, you know, the state house and how things work. Unfortunately, having a freshman rep introduce a controversial bill doesn't always work out great. Mm-hmm. So I ended up finding in my own town, Representative John Petusek, who was an Air Force veteran. I talked to him on election night in 2022. I held his sign for him just to have a conversation with him. And I just talked to him one-on-one, right? This is something that you can't have at the federal government, but you can have at the state levels. You can actually talk to your elected representatives at the state level.
Imagine that you get to have more of a conversation with your representatives than the military industrial complex lobbyists get to. Isn't it great?
It is fantastic. So he was all on board, right? And he's a longtime state rep, a lot of respect, not really, you know, a fire starter or anything like that. I was like, perfect. You'll be my prime sponsor. Then Tom and the rest of them will be, you know, the other sponsors. So really you know, having a pulse. And I'm sure, like, anyone who wants to introduce this in their state, I'm sure if you do enough looking around, you'll find someone who actually knows what goes on in the state house in your state. You know, you got to find that the really good person who would be not a poison pill to your bill, but good to introduce it. So that's what we did. And then the next step after that was getting out of committee. And to get out of committee, you know, we did all sorts of different things. We did phone banks, what we called the committee members, you know, constantly over the course of a few days. You know, anyone who's got like a, you know, cigarette break at work, they would go, they'd make a call. Lunch break, they'd go, they make a round of calls. You know, it's only 20 members. It's only 20 calls. A lot of times you leave a voicemail. You can go through it pretty quick. So you do that over the course of a few days. Emails, right? Sending emails to all the committee members. And then the other thing that we did, right, is a step that a lot of activists really don't want to do is door knocking, getting out there physically, knocking on doors and talking to people. Can be a really difficult thing for a lot of activists to want to do, get, you know, or as an organizer to get volunteers for. But that's honestly, door knocking is the most effective way to get any grassroots stuff done.
So is this when you say door knocking, are you like going door to door in the districts of targeted legislators who you need to win over? Are you having like, you're finding people who would support the issue, or are you having them like sign a petition or send postcards or something? What happens at the door that helps translate to a vote in the legislature?
Right. So what we did is we got together, you know, some trifolds, right? They had QR codes for, you know, sending email petition to the committee. So there's 20 committee members, right? So we went to the, you know, politicians have addresses. We went to the committee members' neighborhoods. I gave, you know, a stack of trifolds to some volunteers, and they knocked on, you know, 100 houses or so within that committee member's neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And even on the committee member themselves, and, you know, knocked on the doors, talked to constituents, be like, hey, your neighbor representative so-and-so is on this committee, is going to be voting on this bill. You know, I think it's really important. I think you should take a look at it. I think you should, a lot of times, we put sticky notes, right, with the phone numbers of the committee members on there too. Like, this is your neighbor, this is their phone number. And a lot of them, that, you know, when we talk to people at the door, they'd be like, oh yeah, I know representative so and so, you know, we go to church together. They're like, yeah, I'll definitely tell them to support this.
Great.
So we turned a 14-2 loss in committee to a 10-10 win, split vote, which in New Hampshire means that the ought to pass is the first motion that's made for the full floor. So that was, you know, going from 14-2 loss to a 10-10 win was a good outcome for New Hampshire that we saw. And, you know, and what we did with the committee hearing too, I mean, we packed those hearings. You know, a lot of times you can send out, you know, a blank statement to like a group of people. You know, you've got like Signal groups or Facebook groups and asking people to show up. But a really effective way to get people to show up is to send one-on-one messages, you know, just text them or call them directly and ask them to show up. And that's what I did. And we filled the room full of people and they were all in support. There was only, you know, just the people who were sent there to oppose it. There wasn't any, you know, actually organic opposition to defend the guard. There usually never is. And we got a really great favorable outcome at committee.
Awesome. And then I know the vote was really close in the House when it came to the floor. Just how close was it?
I forget what it was. It was like 187 to 182, something like that. It was by 5 votes. But you know, what really saved it in the House too, was that we had a good group of breakaway Democrats to join with the rest of the Republican caucus. We had 22 Democrats come and join the good Republican. There was also 26, you know, Republicans who voted against it. There's actually a few Republicans who voted against it who I would consider liberal Republicans who just really just didn't understand the bill at all. I spoke to them afterwards and they were in full support. So, But, you know, there was, you know, a couple Republicans who voted against it. You know, there's still some neocon remnants in New Hampshire. We're working on it.
I'm glad the neocon caucus is getting smaller and smaller every year.
Well, we have a metric now. It's about 26. 26 now, out of 400.
Now, these Democrats who crossed over and voted for, were they more progressive members? Were they like, how would you characterize them ideologically? Are these the kinds of people who are sympathetic to people like Jill Stein, or Bernie Sanders folks, or are they more middle of the road Democrats, or was it like scattered? I mean, what was your experience?
Yeah, it's the New Hampshire House Progressive Caucus, really. You know, I would call them the Bernie Sanders Democrats. One thing that we can't forget is there are still some anti-war Democrats out there, and they are in full support of things like Defend the Guard and a lot of other really great liberty bills, too. One should never be afraid to reach across the aisle to do good.
Ron Paul worked with Dennis Kucinich.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, we had, one of the people who made a floor speech, Representative Ellen Reed, she made an excellent floor speech, you know, really trying to win over a lot of her side. But, we reached out to the New Hampshire ACLU, which endorsed the bill, and a lot of other states too, like in Maine, the Maine ACLU endorsed Defend the Guard too. So you've got that. I made connections with the New Hampshire House Progressive Caucus and the Progressive Caucus themselves. They endorsed the bill. There is still, the anti-war Democrats out there who are in support of these things.
It's good to see that the whole Democratic Party hasn't been completely co-opted by the Hillary Clinton wing and the Victoria Nulands and the, a lot of the whole... The neoconservatives seem to have migrated over and found the new home in the Democratic Party, which I suppose good riddance. It's nice to see there's a few, even if I don't always share their principles, it's nice to see there are still a few principled progressive Democrats who aren't just, progressive on these issues when it's convenient for the Democratic establishment to try to win over young voters. There's a few who actually mean it.
Yeah. So where are we staring now in New Hampshire?
So let's talk about the Senate. And I know very interesting, too, to observe that Defend the Guard has become a wedge issue within the gubernatorial primary between the two candidates running. Former Senate President Chuck Morris and former she was a U.S. Senator, right? Kelly Ayotte?
Correct.
We can start. We can talk about either of those wherever you want to begin. But let's start with the state Senate. Like, where do things stand now? And if people wanted to help, and of course, 501c3 organization here at the Free State Project, I can't tell people, do this or do that. You know, we don't engage in these sorts of things. But you can tell folks whatever you want to tell them as far as what Bring Our Troops Home is doing.
Yeah. So a lot of what we're doing in the Senate. It has a lot of connections with, the governor's race in New Hampshire. The state Senate in New Hampshire is 24 members as opposed to our 400 state representatives. So a little bit more of a exclusive group in the state Senate. They can be a little bit harder to reach, a lot harder to reach, actually.
Yeah.
a lot of times things that happen in the House that have a lot of support end up either dying completely or getting amended into something that it wasn't supposed to be. So it's really tough to get legislation past the state Senate. We do have really good liberty senator in the state Senate, Senator Keith Murphy. He's for the bill, which is great. But that's one out of 24. So what was a real turning point for us, we thought we were going to have to put in a lot of work to get the state Senate in support of this thing. But I just, had our comms team in New Hampshire, Defend the Guard comms team, kind of put out, asking the governor's candidates to support this, since they might be voting on Defend the Guard in the future, because we are going to introduce it every session that we can.
Until it passes, which until could, it passes. Could be this year.
could be. So, you know, we just put out, you know, and within like an hour, former Senate president, who is the longest serving Senate president in New Hampshire, Chuck Morris, who's running for governor, he just immediately jumped on it. He was like, I love it. This thing's great. Fully endorsed. And like over the course of like 5 days, he like doubled down on it, tripled down on it, quadrupled down on it, like kept going and going. Like, this is awesome. Representative Mannion and I, we ended up meeting with, former Senator Morris, and, a lot of love for this bill, like genuine love, yeah. Especially for like the constitutional side of things. He related it a lot to a former bill that passed in 2022, HB 1178, which nullified all federal gun control laws in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. unless, you know, Congress as a whole, not the executive branch, like the ATF, like makes a gun control bill, right?
Yeah.
It has to actually be Congress, not a ruling by the ATF, nullifying federal gun control laws in New Hampshire. So he was like, you know, we already passed something like this for gun control. There's no reason why we can't pass it to defend our National Guard. Like, come on, we've already done this before. This is a no-brainer. And because he was the longest serving Senate president, he has a lot of connections with the currently serving senators, including the current Senate president, Jeb Bradley. So he's been opening a lot of doors for us.
That's awesome. And I have to imagine for him, it's, you know, I hope in his heart of hearts, he really believes it. but I can't help but notice that it's certainly smart politics, because it is a very clear contrast wedge issue between him and Kelly Ayotte, who Kelly Ayotte has a reputation from her time in the U.S. Senate of being a bit of a neoconservative. So it's hard for me to imagine her supporting this. I don't know her very well. I'm new to New Hampshire politics. I'm still getting my feet wet. But I think it is revealing that he has seized on this issue and been so vocal about it. And from her, it seems like there's just been silence. Have you heard anything from her?
No, nothing. I tried talking to someone from our team, and they said that they're looking at it. And I gave them like my number, my card, and everything like that. I was like, you know, let me know once you guys need any help. You know, like, do you have any questions? I'm an expert on this thing. Like, I can tell you, you know, Title 10, Section 12301, subsection. Like, I've got all this knowledge because I've been so involved in this. It's like, do you have any questions? I haven't heard anything from them. You know, keep reaching out, hoping that maybe if she is, because I do think that this will be a major deciding issue as Defend the Guard continues to become, a national project in every single state. I think in a lot of times, right, the primaries, like the Republican primary, Democrat primary, a lot of times the primaries are decided by the insiders, not necessarily the general voting population. Right. Yeah. And I think the Republican insiders, especially, you know, what we've learned from the last couple of primaries, are really rejecting the neocon rhetoric. And I think Defend the Guard will become, you know, one of those issues, deciding issues with New Hampshire Republican primary voters, or whether they're voting for Chuck Morris or if they're voting for Kelly Ayotte. I'm hoping Kelly Ayotte will come with support of this. You know, if she calls herself a constitutionalist, this is a constitutional legislation. You know, this is probably a really great thing to help her campaign and not be a wedge issue. You know, shouldn't let something become an issue, you know, that doesn't have to be.
So we are running out of time. There's so much more. I could talk to you for hours about this. But I want to give you a last word, any final parting thoughts you want to share with folks before we wrap up for the evening.
Yeah. So I highly encourage you that you go to defendtheguard.us. There'll be a map of the United States, and you can click on your state and you can find out where the progress is for Defend the Guard in your state. And you can, you know, whether you're in New Hampshire and you're looking to move to New Hampshire, I really hope you do. Especially in New Hampshire and the New Hampshire section, right? There'll be a petition, sign the petition, join us in the movement. But then again, defendtheguard.us/phonebank. you know, enlist in our phone bank service. You know, we get together, whether it be New Hampshire, Tennessee, Idaho, Arizona, Maine, right? We all get together and we target the key votes for, you know, committee, and we give them calls and we give them calls until we get that, yes, I'm voting for it, right? We put the pressure on them. We make those representatives really feel it from their constituents and from voters across the country, not just in their state, but across the country, that this is a big issue, that they need to be on the right side of history.
Awesome. Well, Derek, with Bring Our Troops Home, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next with Defend the Guard in New Hampshire.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see good things coming.
Awesome. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. That's the show. For the most part, let's close out here. I want to tell you about another event, right? We've talked about the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, which is, as of the time of this episode being released, just 9 days away. Get your tickets at nhlibertyforum.com. But also this summer, June 17th through the 23rd at beautiful Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire, we have the Porcupine Freedom Festival, a family-friendly freedom festival, the largest liberty festival in America. Ron Paul's going to be speaking to all Porkfest goers virtually. He's going to be coming to us virtually over the interwebs like I am to you now. But you can also go camping with 2,000 of your favorite libertarians, including Scott Horton, Gene Epstein, Jeffrey Tucker, James Bovard, David Friedman, and so many more. This is not to be missed. So grab your tickets at porkfest.com before they sell out. It's going to be very popular, so bring your friends, bring your family. I mentioned this is a family-friendly freedom festival, and reserve your campsite while supplies last. Space is very limited. So go to porkfest.com. That's pork with a C, not with a K. As I always remind you, if you go to Porkfest with a K, I don't know what you'll find. Maybe a delicious barbecue festival, but it won't be the family-friendly Freedom Festival you're looking for. Porkfest.com with a C. And that's the show, everyone. I want to say thank you to our technical producer, Justin O'Donnell, as always, for running things behind the scenes. And furthermore, my opinion is the Federal Reserve should be destroyed. Talk to you all next week.